faith in nothing. I want to put my tender heart in a blender. Watch it spin around to a beautiful oblivion. Rendezvous, then I'm through with you.
Man, I just finished the floor in like the addition part that's not the bathroom. And it came out so fucking good. I've outdone myself. I'm so proud of it. I can't wait for you to see it. It's just, it's a work of art. I catch a glimpse of it. Now I've taken down I put up big barriers to keep the dust kind of contained a bit. And I've taken those down now because I'm getting close and I'm like moving big things in and out. And so now whenever I walk by and I catch a glimpse of it, I just get this huge smile on my face. I just love it so much. And man, super excited. So now I have like a bigger open area and a room, but it's not yet a bathroom. There's no toilet. There's no vanity. That's my next step, is to actually make it a usable new room. And I think I'll get that all done today. Yeah. So that's feeling really good. I've got today, tomorrow. Yeah. Today, tomorrow and Monday. So I've got 3 days left where I can do work. And I think I'm going to get it all done, dude. I kind of can't believe it, but, and there's a bunch of things that I've dropped off the list. Like the ceiling is not done. It's not going to be done. Least important part, you know, it's much more important that you can walk somewhere than that you can look up and see something pretty. I'm curious, since you asked the question, how are your stress levels doing?
They're reasonably high.
I'm a little overwhelmed. It feels like there are too many things to do and not enough hours in the day, or
yeah,
at the very least, there's a couple of things that are too nebulous in terms of, I'm not sure how long they're going to take. I think what I probably need to do tomorrow, because tomorrow and Sunday and Monday are going to be spent fairly busily. Mm-hmm. I've got all sorts of things to prep for, to come and meet you, and to make sure that this place is shippity shape. My hallway is full of boxes, mostly of cat food and cat litter.
Nice.
So we've got both ends of the cat taken care of. So some of that is for the residents, the people who will be coming here because they've got a cat. And some of that is for my cats who will be going away.
So the person someone's coming to stay at your flat while you're gone?
Yes.
And they have a cat, and they can't take care of your cat while they're there?
No. So the original plan was that I was going to get a professional cat sitter who would look in on the babies at least once a day.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds a good plan.
Yeah. Then I started meeting up with an old friend from the internet who I'd never actually spent any time alone with in person before. It was always via someone else sort of thing. But they live nearby. And we got to talking a while back, and they used to have a cat, and then, you know, nature took its course and they no longer have a cat. And so they were looking to foster. And so one thing led to another, and it was like, what if you took my cats? And that was worked out for a few weeks. And then I got a text from that person saying, there's so many middle people here, but basically two people from New Zealand are coming home to the UK. So two people from, you know, expats and are now repatting and need somewhere to pat. And so we were sort of figuring that out. And so they were going to stay here while I was away.
Okay, cool.
Because the timing works out perfectly. And so that was that. And then they said, yeah, we've got a cat. We've got to figure out what to do with a cat, because presumably it's a no cats allowed situation. And I was like, well, now it turns out that it's very much a cat situation. What I didn't think of at the time, because, you know, I like to be helpful. I like to please.
Yeah.
I didn't really think of the disruption to my cats in terms of smelling other cats when they come back, but we will cross that bridge. There are so many bridges. But I was like, hey, actually, no, it is sort of cat friendly. You are more than welcome to bring your cat. So they're bringing their cat over who's been in quarantine or whatever.
That does sound quite stressful with all the balls juggling for that.
Well, there are definitely balls because I wanted to make sure that, because this cat, like mine, is on a particular dietary thing. So I got that ordered for them. So there's you know, food here and litter here. And then I'm taking as many things over to the cat sitter for Roscoe and Bailey as possible. So they've got some familiar things.
Do they have a favorite blanket or anything that they like to curl up into?
Yeah, I do.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be a good thing.
What I might do is I won't take that to the other house, but I will hide it away so that it doesn't get used while I'm here. Sorry, while sure. I'm away.
Sure.
And then I can bring it out for them when they come back. So, yeah. And then I've got to clear out my wardrobes, partly because there's just a lot of clothing in there, but also I need to make space for the people's clothes because they're going to be here for, you know, like 2 weeks. And they don't want to live out of a suitcase for that long. So give them some wardrobe space, which means getting rid of a lot of clothes of mine.
There's two types of people that, like, when traveling, that want to use a wardrobe and that do not give a shit, because I'm one of the do not give a shit people. Like, I'll be in a hotel for 2 weeks. I won't use the wardrobe at all. I'll just live out of the suitcase. Like, that's great.
Yeah, depending on the place, I sometimes like the order. I definitely like order.
If I was staying at somebody's house,
yeah,
like house sitting for just a while, I would not at all expect that their wardrobe was cleaned out so that I could use it.
I'm not cleaning it out, but just to know, give them a bit of space. I'm not entirely sure I would have thought of that either. It was other people who thought of that. Yeah. So there's that, and I've also got 2 episodes of Undo to record, and I need to wrap all the Christmas presents and make sure they're all set, and there's someone's birthday while I'm away, and make sure that's all sorted. So I've got to go get cards. I've also got to shop for clothes for myself so that I've got some things to wear to fill up the wardrobe that I've just emptied. and then... there's just, you know, other general things that happen around this time. And this week I've just, like, Monday was taken up by an impromptu long stay from the cat sitter because I was like, you should come around and meet the cats. That would probably be a good thing to do. So they came around Monday or Tuesday, and I just so happened to have a chicken in the air fryer. Because, you know, I was just going to throw something together and just know that I had the chicken for, you know, throughout the week. I was like, have you eaten? And then ended up cooking for both of us. So that ended up being my evening. So I've had, I'm really tired, Brendan.
Yeah, you sound like it. You sound more tired than I am.
I do.
Day 13 and a half of no food.
Yeah.
It's been a fascinating journey. I was just telling Sean that I was because I asked him, like, because he's the one that did the 18 and a half day fast for the documentary that he was doing about fasting, and his goal was 30 days, but he did not have as much stored energy, let's say, as I've got. So yeah, so he had to bail at a certain point, but it was still an interesting experience for him. And I asked him in my text this morning, I was like, did you ever think that I would ever, you know, do a 13 and a half day fast or an 18 and a half day fast? Right. I guess mine will actually be 17 and a half days because of how timing works. But, and he's like, this is not at all expected. from the Brendan that I grew up with, and no, this is not what I ever expected. And I told him that I had 3 goals for this and reasons for doing it. And, you know, one was to reset myself back to where I wanted to be, because, you know, this time last year, I was 200 pounds and super happy with my body shape and everything after a long time of intermittent or time-restricted feeding and some small fasts. And then I started working out. So I gained some bulk, which I liked. I liked the muscle mass. And I wasn't really gaining fat, which is great. But then, you know, the lawsuit happened and I fell off protocol. And for like 8 months or so, I was eating cake and just eating way too much, eating very large meals often. And yeah, I got back up to 245 pounds. And, you know, part of me was, I was also working out at the same time. And part of me was like, I don't know how much of this is body fat and how much of this is muscle. And I don't know how to calculate that. And I even have this stupid smart scale that's supposed to tell me the percentages and stuff. I don't trust those numbers at all. They don't make sense. So yeah, so my goal of this fast was to get back down to the body size and shape that I want. And man, I can feel like I have lost weight. I've lost 25-ish pounds. So on top of seeing myself smaller and feeling smaller, which is great, like I feel my belly and it's like I can touch myself closer to my core.
The naked robotic core.
It feels so good. It just feels so good to not have that, barrier between myself, you know? I don't even know how to describe it. I really like being my naked robotic core for sure. The second aspect of why I'm doing this was to experiment with testing my limits and exploring discomfort, just sitting with it and being like, oh, this is a feeling. No feeling is final. I'm curious about this. What is my body telling me with this right now? Is it telling me the truth or is it telling me what it thinks it needs to tell me? And am I getting messages from something outside my body? What's going on with this? Let's investigate. Let's just sit with it. I'm not going to die. I'm just going to explore. It's fine. And that's been easier than I expected. You know, now I'm tried and true with fasting, and I've gotten glimpses into all of these feelings for a long time. And so I'm not scared of them the way I would be if I had just jumped into a fucking 20-day fast out of nowhere. That would be ridiculous, you know, coming off of a standard Western diet. And then lastly, it was, you know, to get more information for the God Mode protocol. And I've really built out a big new section for the protocol for prolonged fasting and how to do that in a good way. And I think it'll also help inform the rest of it. And so now I've got too much information, and now I'm trying to cut as much as possible to fit it back down into 3 pages maximum. Because I don't want it to go on forever. I've got so much to say, but it's like this just needs to be a concise document. And so, but it's coming together. I'm really pleased, and I've learned a lot.
Incredible. Do you think you'll make it to 18?
At the moment, like I see no reason why I wouldn't. I don't feel particularly like hungry. I've got no group meal. Like the only reason I'm breaking on 18 is because it's Christmas and it's a family mm-hmm. gathering. I'm not gonna do this experiment at the cost of a family gathering or mm-hmm. a friendship meal or anything like that. And there's no other times where we're, you know, there's kind of a planned breaking of bread, you know, like, so I'm absolutely gonna break it then. And I haven't, for the past 2 weeks, I haven't really had any need for food, like any desire for food. I even, like, I have to remind myself. Yeah, no, it's really true.
Wow.
I mean, so, okay. Yeah. I think of food, or somebody tells me about a food, or I yeah. smell a food, and I'm like, oh, that sounds fucking delicious. But I'm not like, I need to have it. Sure. I'm just like, oh man, when I get to eat again, I'm going to devour that shit. Like it's so separated. Like there's two parts completely. It's like, that sounds awesome. It's like $1 million. Sure. That sounds incredible. I don't need it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's sure. not for me right now. yeah, no, there's no desire to eat. In fact, when you get to day 7 of a fast and you have pickle brine for the first time, fuck, dude. Holy shit. Is that the best explosion thing in the flavors. Fucking world? I just had a new one last night, yesterday. It's called Moon Brine, and they give you as much brine as they do pickles in this bag. And I got the spicy version, which has like onions and peppercorns and hot peppers. Oh, wow, was that good. And it was like, it was lighter on the vinegar flavor. Like I typically have Bubbies, and it's really high on the vinegar, which tastes amazing, but it's like super acidic, especially with my normal water blend of with lemon and lime juice in it. And so I'm having all this acid, and I really started to notice acidic, upset stomach. So I started adding, I started reducing the amount of lemon and lime juice I'm putting in my water daily. And I started adding like a quarter teaspoon of baking soda to every other water half gallon that I make. And man, that's just completely neutralized the upset stomach of the vinegar. And so that's been working out really well. I was a little bit concerned that I would volcano in my stomach with having baking soda and vinegar.
Oh, God.
But luckily that's not been happening. The amounts are too small for it to, it seems. And I did check before, I did some research beforehand if baking soda is okay to just have on its own. And the general consensus was, yes, just don't do it all the time, because it can have bad effects over the long period. But I think
what's the good effect of the baking soda?
It restores the pH balance in your stomach. So there's two things. There's a pH of a thing, and then there's the alkalinity. And apparently they're two different things, although I thought that they were the same thing. I haven't researched that enough.
Well, yeah, because pH is a scale of alkalinity to acidity, isn't it?
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But then I did a bunch of research on baking soda, and they're like, they're two separate things. And I'm like, the fuck? So I don't know. Because okay. I was like, should I just be drinking alkaline water? And like, you know, oh, wait, could I make alkaline water by adding baking soda? And then, so that's how I went down that road. And yeah, it seems like it's working for me, at least. It's an experiment, you know?
I had an interesting conversation last week that we briefly exchanged about over text. I ended up talking to my parents about this as well, because I just thought it was one of those sort of interesting things, and a little bit full on disappointing is not necessarily the word, but that sort of, and it's a little bit related to the tall poppy stuff that we talked about last week, but it's also very much related, or that's one of the times it's flared up. But another of the times, this conversation I had over the weekend is with someone of the X generation, who is one of the things that I'm gathering is such a high degree of skepticism. And also, like, we got into a conversation about vaccinations. And I'm pro-vax. And
I'm pro in certain circumstances.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that.
No, you carry on first. We'll get back to that.
Well, see, this is where it got interesting, because, okay, I'll present the general thesis first, and then we can noodle around the edges. The general thesis, I think, is some of us are sort of journeying through life and trying to remain as open as possible and interested in the world and curious. That doesn't mean unskeptical, but it means being willing to hear someone out and actually hear something that you initially don't agree with, or that maybe even raises a hackle. And then to actually hear what they're saying, and then to ask questions. And so we talked a couple of weeks ago about this idea of connecting on feelings when it's, you know, when we have someone that we feel diametrically opposed to, that we should, you know, think about, because it came down to this argument about safety, you know, all these people coming over here taking our jobs is a feeling of not being safe. And actually what I sort of realized this week was that's the basics of nonviolent communication, is that right. we need to connect on the needs of people. So it's not actually the feelings, but it's connecting on the underlying needs. And what a lot of those things address, especially, you know, if we politicize it briefly, a lot of the stuff on the right tends to tweak on people's fears, because that's very potent, and it's a very easy button to push. And when you push it, but you know, things happen.
Yeah.
And so when you look at the fear, what is the, you know, what is the fear telling you? It's telling you you have an unmet need to be safe and or to feel safe. And so when if you can have a conversation with someone and get into help them articulate what their needs are, because they're not going to know straight away necessarily, but to get underneath that, then you can connect, because feelings are, and there's proper language for this, but needs are universal is not the right word, but they are undeniable. They're not debatable. Your needs don't have an opinion. They are your needs. They are what you need.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter why you need them. They are your needs. And so that's the thing to connect on, is the unmet needs. What I was interested in with this conversation I was as I was having is so going back to the broad thesis here is, we as people who are, you know, maybe dudes trying to be better dudes or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, we are,
mm-hmm.
we are continuing to try and keep the earlobes open and to listen and to be interested and curious and open up to new ideas that are maybe scary or uncertain or feel like they go against what we thought we knew. And I think I've always been like that. I've always met things with a degree of skepticism, mm-hmm. and that door is made of strong stuff, but it swings very easily is sure. the best way I can put it.
Mm-hmm.
And that ain't the case for a lot of people.
No.
And when you realize that, and people that you know that are smart and compassionate and kind and funny and loving, and I'm talking about people who are, you know, not that older than me. I'm not talking about, hey, boomers. I'm not, you know, that's not what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
But it's almost the growth mindset versus the opposite of that, whatever it is, the fixed mindset, I think it is. So yeah, like we were having conversations about things like vaccination and various other things, and I could hear my friend sniffing around for buzzwords, and trying to poke and trying to label
mm-hmm.
me or you or whoever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are you anti-vax? Are they anti-vax? And it's like,
it's not that simple for one thing.
It actually isn't. But you know, there's tribalism in there. There's lots of other things.
Oh yeah. So much fear.
Yeah. And so we were talking about the conversation you and I had, and we were talking about, cause I'd mentioned the fasting that I was doing, and that was almost immediately met with suspicion because, you know,
oh my God, me too. Yeah. So I've been forbidden to talk about it at Christmas. I'm not allowed to say, oh, this is my first meal in 18 days. Yeah. It's like
forbidden by whom?
Oh, my darling wife.
Okay.
She doesn't want her family to be like, oh, we're so worried about you and sure. this and that. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
and Margaret, man, bless her heart. You know, she just wants the best for me. She loves me unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
But she's super supportive generally.
Uh-huh.
But doesn't love the idea of what I'm doing, this right. experiment that I'm trying, and I'm really thankful that that you and Sean are people that I can talk to right now, because like from my perspective, you're not supporting or discouraging it. You're curious. You're there for me as a friend.
And supporting Sean, you, yeah.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
as Margaret is, I'm pointing you.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sean has been there before, so he knows it, and he's, you know, kind of not slightly encouraging it, but he's like checking in on me and just like, how you doing? Like what's going on and stuff. And that's been really great. And Margaret's been like, so you gonna end you want some food? Like how about we go eat? And can you make this food for me? And all these things, and I want some popcorn. And like, yeah, that sounds incredible. And Yeah. Anyways, derailed you, but
no, at all. But yeah, so you know, and it got to this point, and because we were talking about God, I mean, we actually rehashed a lot of the stuff that we talked about in the episode 2 weeks ago, where I came back from the hospital, because my friend hadn't heard. We had, because the time we were going to catch up was the time I was in hospital. So yeah, she sort of got that, and I was talking about, you know, how I ended up going was because I'd noticed this change in my body due to the fasting, which made me, you know, concerned. As we discussed, it turned out to be nothing. The nothing being it was a gastric upset rather than We got around a lot of things, and I think I ended up doing what I so often do, and I actually caught myself partway through sort of saying, why am I justifying, like, why am I defending myself? And I actually said to her, I was sort of subtweeting her, and I actually said something along the lines of, I wish people in my life would give me the benefit of the doubt, or give me a little bit more grace, or whatever it was the phrase that I used, that like, I'm not a child and I'm not an idiot. I can explore things and be interested in things.
Yeah.
Without, it's like my friend can't seem to understand how I can explore an idea or even be really enthusiastic about an idea and not be carried away by it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cute to begin with. It was, you know, a couple of years ago, oh, you've entered a cult, lol. And it's like, yeah, okay. But the more you try and explain or whatever, it's like the more that person is like, clearly you're in a cult.
Yeah.
And like, yes, you know, there were things that there were behaviors. This is all business stuff. Like, you know, it was just like, there was stuff about business that I was interested in and trying out. And there were things that I rejected and things that I rolled my eyes up, but there were also things that I thought were good ideas, but it's a system and Gen X people don't like systems. And so we ended up, I can't remember how, but we were talking about vaccinations. I think I might have been trying to explain how I'm interested in different viewpoints and how the world can be complex and we can hold different views in our heads. The example I was giving was, there was a video that I was shown back in March or something from an NHS doctor who was on TikTok saying, I'm going to be in trouble. Like, they keep taking these videos down. I keep getting in trouble. But there are problems with the COVID vaccine. I can't remember which one it is. And I was curious. I was interested. Like, he didn't seem like a quack. He didn't seem like a like a crazy person. Mm-hmm. But also, okay, well, if there are, why aren't people investigating it more? I'm not a big conspiracy person. So I took it to, you know, my doctor clients, and they were like, yeah. I mean, I can't remember if I showed them the video or if I described it. And they were like, yeah, they're free to say what they want. Like, they can. They're not really going to get, you know, they're not going to get struck off by saying, you know, what they want. So, yeah, I don't know about that. And she was like, you know, you take the vaccine, which is particularly my thing. Like, I haven't taken the vaccine for a while, but that's not, it's just because it stopped being available on the NHS. It's not because, you know, whatever. Now,
I just want to quickly interject
yes.
and say that those doctors don't know how social media works.
No,
I see the very smart, open-minded accounts that I follow, like that there's a foundation that runs this natural eating kind of lifestyle. Not the Galen Foundation. It'll come to me. Fuck. They wrote a book called Nourishing Traditions. I'm not going to remember it. Anyways, it's all about eating like whole foods and right, real stuff. And yeah, they had an anti-vax kind of post, and it immediately got flagged and banned and taken down and stuff. And absolutely. Anytime anybody says anything wrong about anything, not wrong, but flag worthy. About vaccines, it gets taken down and I totally legitimately believe that doctor from what they were saying, that their stuff gets taken down all the time.
I think it was more from not necessarily taken down from social media, but being told by the NHS that you shouldn't publicize these things, but maybe it amounts to the same thing. And this is where it became interesting for me, is I believe that we should, we were right to vaccinate because we were protecting those around us and those were vulnerable. And we also don't know everything about the vaccine. Both things can be true.
Yep.
And I was, describing you as being someone, and this is where it got in, and this is where I really noticed, like, oh, she's looking for me to say certain trigger words so that she can put you, for example, in a box.
Mm-hmm.
And, she straight off said, oh, is he an anti-vaxxer? And I went, I don't think so. I know that he's very careful about what he puts in his body, but I remember what you were doing during the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020 and going out, and like, I know how much you care about other people's safety. And that was something, you were out looking after other people while there were, while there were protests and things going on. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not going to be drawn on that so that you can dismiss, this particular person because it fits that Gen X mindset of, well, this is all quackery. This is all not to be trusted. And it kind of got under my skin a little bit. No, under my skin, it's probably not the right phrase. But it was a bit disappointing. It's one of those things I thought better of you.
Yeah, no, I get that. It's just showing their closed-mindedness, and it's sad.
Yeah.
So yeah, my stance on vaccines, like, I was actually just talking to Margaret about this because we're thinking about having, or we're working on having kids, and so I was like, what? I don't have an answer here. I don't have a firm thought or belief. Like, what do you think about vaccines? Like, let's prepare for that a little bit, just in our minds. And we both kind of came to the conclusion that, at least, in our current mind states, what we're thinking is the typical array of children's vaccines preventing measles and mumps and I don't know what was it, all those big ones,
rubella, measles, mumps, and rubella. I think MMR were the big ones, if I remember rightly.
Yeah. So yeah. So I think that we're planning on, like, the traditional kids vaccines, we're going to have them receive because they've been used for generations.
They don't give kids autism.
They don't give kids autism.
Fucking hell, that was such a big thing.
That's from ultra processed foods. Like, that's a whole other conspiracy.
It clears up with bleach.
It does not clear up with bleach.
Thank you.
It clears up with fasting. No, I'm just kidding. Like, that does not.
None of this.
None of this is medical advice.
No. Well, also, I fired a client by saying that autism is caused by diet. So anyway. But yes.
But when it comes,
and by the way, I'm not testing you in terms of, I'm not looking for a right answer.
Yeah, and that's good because I don't have them.
So far though, you're answering correctly.
Oh, great. Love to hear it.
Yeah.
I want to be right always. Mm. And when I'm not, I want to be corrected so that I am right. Like, it's as simple as that.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Correct me if I'm wrong, always. But when it comes, so like, I think I've gotten the flu shot once in my life, outside of maybe, whenever my parents may have gotten it for me, but I don't recall that. But in my adult life, I think maybe once. And I feel like I recall regretting it.
Mm.
But also, like, most of the time I just couldn't be bothered. I'm like, whatever. I'm not around old people. I'm not going to spread this or whatever. I'm just, it's not for me. I don't care. When the COVID vaccine came, I was like, all on board. I'm like, yeah, I'll do my civic duty. I want to stop the spread. This seems really scary. And so I got my shot. I got my first booster. And fuck, did I get a second booster? I don't remember. I don't think I may have. I can't remember now. But now, where I'm at now, I will not get one again. I will not get another booster. I don't plan on getting a flu shot, but that's for a different reason. But COVID specifically, so tangent, but this is related. The doctor that came up with the mold killing protocol, Dr. Jill Krista, she she's an expert in mold, expert in a lot of things. She had a practice for many, many years helping people get rid of mold in their systems or in their houses, and or recovering from it being in their houses rather. And wrote a book called Break the Mold, fantastic book. And then she started teaching other doctors how to treat their patients for mold. So she kind of moved away from her own practice and started doing that and teaching seminars and getting this and that. And like, she's fascinated by research. She loves diving deep into the things. She at first was also all into the vaccines, like let's do our part and everything. And then she heard a couple of things from also from her rational doctor friends or colleagues or whatever, and was like bringing into question some things about the COVID vaccine. It's like, this is worthy of investigation. So she took like a year of research before she made anything public. And then she did this, I'm subscribed to her newsletter, and she did like this 12 issue series just on the COVID vaccines, where typically she only talks about mold. It's clear that she understands a lot of different realms of health and everything from her newsletter and her book and everything, but she almost always relates it back to mold. This time it was unrelated to that, and it was slightly related only to the fact that somebody who has mold is susceptible to chronic conditions, and the COVID vaccine flares up chronic conditions in many different ways. But that aside, she was looking into it for its own legitimacy and found some very troubling things. And I'm going to, this was a year or two ago. I can't remember all the details, but here are the highlights that I recall now. One was that the pharmaceutical companies had to test this vaccine on human patients before distributing it, and had to have data on living dying ratios of those people. The people that got the vaccine had a higher death rate than the people who didn't. It wasn't massively higher, but it was higher. And it wasn't massively less like it's supposed to be. It wasn't helping. And they just buried it. They just didn't spread. They're like, well, let's not show that around. Let's just get this out there, because the world wants a vaccine right now. They want to feel safe. So yeah, so they just carried on. There were two other things. One, that COVID was patented a year prior. So there was a whole like kind of tangent about the genesis of this, and like there's this, you know, story that a wet market in China had different butchered animals that were close to each other, and it like, you know, whatever. That was just a completely fabricated story. It was in labs. It was in both in China and fucking West Virginia or something. It was in the United States. It was something that they knew about and were working on, and people were working on to do whatever with. I think that I don't remember exactly, but I believe that there was some sort of chemical weapon type use for this, which is its own sort of crazy, fresh scary hell. Yeah. And I think they were trying to target certain demographics with it and shit. I was like, what? I don't know. And there was another thing. I think it was around the new technologies that were used to produce these vaccines, and how we have no idea how they really affect the body over the long term. And it's kind of massively scary what we're just injecting into everybody. without much, you know, like even an iPhone will get stress test to the max before it's put out. And these are going into our body. So you know, when I heard all that, I was just like, I already don't really super trust the medical industry for I think
that's on record.
I think for valid reasons. and I want to be safe. I want to do whatever is best. I care about my fellow humans. And I don't know. I don't think that's the way. There's also this massive elephant in the room about control we were all gaslit into, I mean, one person says gaslit, one person says, you know, warned or convinced or you know, accurately, whatever, that this virus was more deadly and worse than others. And it was a factor of control that we all stay inside our houses. It was an experiment to get us to all do what the powers that be tell us to do, to stay inside your houses. Okay, now wear masks. Okay, now get this vaccine. Put this in your body now, and forever change your chemical chemistry because of this. And that's really fascinating to me. I don't have answers, but there is a factor of control. And I think that if people are thinking that, if that's an idea that's out there, I think that it's an idea that was also probably up there with the powers that be.
So we talked ages ago about religion and the idea that Catholicism seemed to do a very good job of taking certain pagan rituals or other rituals and denigrating them and saying that's dumb, that's old fashioned, or it's hokum, or it's superstition, or it's whatever.
Yeah.
And I think you've already pulled on the chain that I'm pulling here. it's very difficult to there is an argument to be made that there are some very smart people who have done a very good, this is the meta-conspiracy, who have done a very good job of creating a caricature of a person who believes all sorts of conspiracy theories and who has the tinfoil hat and who believes that aliens are in, you know, Area 51 and Roswell and there was the alien autopsy and all that kind of stuff. Serves people in power very well to have an archetypical conspiracy nut job.
Oh, yeah.
Because it allows a lot of ideas to be dismissed.
Oh, yeah.
And I think going back to, you know, the conversation with my Gen X friend who was dismissing a lot of ideas, it's important, I think, to ask what is the benefit of dismissing the idea? What is the benefit or what is the harm in at least listening to the idea and following the chain? What harm does being curious do? Versus what harm, like what benefit does it do you to not accrue it, to avoid accruing what might be potential knowledge? It might be hokum, but it might not be. And what's the benefit to you of sticking your fingers in your ears and going la la la, not listening? So yeah, I think there's just a few things in there that sort of bubble around for me that there is that kind of meta idea or meta narrative of the conspiracy nut. They're all hiding stuff from us, and it's like they're definitely hiding some things from us. Of course, for sure. You know, I was thinking. Funnily, so I've just finished my third, probably, or if not fourth, re-listen to a radio comedy series called Cabin Pressure, and it's absolutely delightful. It is 27 episodes of sort of 30-minute sitcom based in the premise is a small charter air. They're not an airline. They've only got one jet. It's because the woman who runs the company got the jet in the divorce because she married a rich guy. And the cast is wonderful. The it's won all sorts of awards for writing and whatnot. It's wonderful. And there was the fantastic line. It's got, I think one of the so that it's written by a guy called John Finnemore. And I think one of his family members is in the industry because he was they were listed as an aviation consultant at the end of the series. Mm-hmm. And so when there are lines like this, I kind of perk up. There was a line where the CEO, because it's a tiny company, she's also their like head steward. And so she's speaking to someone and the passenger says, I guess you're going to complain about my mobile phone. You're going to ask me to turn my phone off or whatever. And the CEO says, it's something like, I guess you want me to turn my phone off because it interferes with navigation. And she says, no, of course it doesn't interfere with navigation. Otherwise we wouldn't let you have them. And it's just such it's such a great line because it really makes me think about, and we've got security theater and we've got various other things going back to control. That to me feels, and I'm sure it's so Googleable that Google probably auto completes the thought of is the whole turn your phone off while you're on the flight to do with controlling, making sure that we can keep the people in this massive flying tin can. Can we keep them compliant? Because it's important that they are compliant.
I love the idea that Google will autocomplete that whole sentence.
It's a very long autocomplete. Thank God Google doesn't talk like I do. But it's that's the thing, isn't it? It's turn your phone off because it doesn't matter. It's the turning your phone off that's the important thing. It's the fact that you obey the instruction to turn your phone off.
Obey. Yeah.
Obey. And you can go the dark side or you can go the whatever. And it's like the point of that is, because we want to, or an American expression, the sort of Pollyanna view of that is like, we want to keep everyone safe in the aircraft. Okay, that's fair enough. It's a hugely flammable metal can flying through space.
Yeah.
Probably a good idea that we keep people behaving themselves. Okay.
Yeah.
When we're back on the ground, though, then it becomes a slightly different thing. When people are in their own homes, God, am I going to end up being a libertarian? Fuck. I don't want to be a libertarian, Brendan.
Why?
They're awful.
Just the ones that preach about it. Just the ones that, are awful. But there's awful and smart Republicans/right-wingers. There's awful and smart Democrats and liberals.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
They're all fucking your party or political leanings don't make how good of a person you are.
Yes and no.
Fight me.
Fight me, Daddy. But I think in many ways I probably butt up against libertarianism more than I do small government versus no government, whatever. The problem with the idea of small government and why it is incorrect, because there are right, and this is the thing that, like, as much as I'm open-minded, yes, there are also correct and incorrect answers to a lot of things. my friend who we no longer speak of tried to, coach me out of this. And it's like, no, this one I'm right about. Society needs a social safety net. We need to look after the people that can't look after themselves or who need an extra leg up. There's a great thing.
We've advanced to the point of humanity where we have the capability to take care of other people. And so we have a social right to do that.
I would say...
Right and responsibility.
A responsibility, yeah. I would say a responsibility. I don't use that word that often. I usually try and go for opportunity, but I think in this case, we have a responsibility to look after people who can't. We have to look after the people who cannot look after themselves because otherwise they might die and that's not good enough. Or they might suffer and that's not good enough.
Yeah.
And the problem with certainly my understanding or my perhaps blinkered view of the tenet of libertarianism is either little to no government, and we all, what it feels like, and again, it's maybe my twisted view, but it feels very much like every person for themselves. And that ain't good enough. Because that can only work if your shit is fine. And you only like and only caring about your shit. But you know, if your society consists of three people living in a bunker, kind of fair enough. Because if you're not drawing from other resources,
right.
Then have at it, I guess. But if you're going to live in a society, you fucking contribute. And this is where I like the jokes are leaving the room, because this is a fact, and it is the this is where there is a correct answer and an incorrect answer. And the problem with small government is it doesn't, it's so focused on the individual or a small group or the family, fucking family values and all that kind of stuff, that it deliberately or it expects that the market or someone else will pick up the slack, or that small groups can do that stuff. And it's like, and you know, because my friend was trying to go the thing of like, yeah, well, you know, lots of little small societies. Okay, great. So you live in your small society, and one of your and someone's just given birth to a child with exceptional needs. I mean, I didn't need this encounter to have this thought anyway, but it just so happens that yesterday I was editing a podcast with someone, a guest, and I happen to know them anyway, whose child lasted, they were in a hospital for 700 days, and they lasted, I don't think they made it to 3, because not because their needs were so complex, but something happened due to those needs being so complex. And so you're going to tell me that your little society that you've created here, and then, you know, we beg barter and we work with the other little society, and it's an arco thing, and that's kind of lovely and cute. That's great. What happens when the only hospital that can look after this particular person is halfway across the country? Then what happens? Because if every society, if every little mini society is looking out for themselves,
that doesn't
play. You can't cross those borders. And so that's why that stuff is like patently bullshit and incorrect. And it's not just about ideology. It's about like, it is so fundamental that we look after each other. That's not just morally right and wrong. That is the factually correct thing to do.
Yeah, I get that. So, yeah. So you've convinced me. I forgot about how much libertarians want the limited government. Like, I remember that that's a factor of it, but I wasn't really thinking about how they kind of want the degradation of promoting social and economic welfare of all people. And that's just bullshit. I mean, that's aiming the cannon at the wrong thing. That's missing the point of where the problems lie. The individual freedom aspect is fucking great. The non-aggression principle, amazing, love it. But yeah, the limited government, in the way that libertarians want it, is too far and off base.
That's the thing, you know, and reasonable people can disagree about lots of things. We can talk about size of government and in terms of, you know, a country the size of America in terms of states' rights versus federalism, and like all those things are absolutely there for debate. And there will be nuance and there will be other things. And, you know, where should taxation come from? How should it be divvied up? What should be devolved? All of those things are smart, intelligent things to discuss. And there is absolutely a spectrum of opinion there, and there should be. You know, I have mine, and I think, yes, we, you know, government in the UK got too big, even under Labour, which is left wing. It got too big, and it got unwieldy and ended up with various problems. There is nuance and there is stuff to debate, but when it comes down to when you actually look at it in that respect, and you know, maybe that's the if you like privilege of being born not just with my own disability, but being around a lot of kids with more complex needs than mine, and knowing, Jesus, I mean, we've got an NHS here that can look after those people. I can't imagine what that must be like in the US. You know, you by the luck or the capriciousness of the gods, you might now have a child that's got incredibly complex needs. If you haven't got the right paperwork, the right insurance, fucking dot, you know what I mean? And so to sort of argue in any way that, I'm not trying to convince you, and you know, I wasn't earlier when you said I'm convinced,
it was more like I was just reminded.
I believe, you know, and yeah, I believe it very strongly.
Yeah. So also then going back to your self-complaint, like having the position of, I can't even remember what position you held that made you feel like you were a libertarian, but holding that one position doesn't make you a libertarian.
No, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I took a
no, that's great.
Hell of a tangent. That's what we're here for.
So, dear listener, we've got some travel plans ahead of us. Not for me. I'm staying right here, staying in my house as much as I possibly can. But our lovely Mark is coming over to visit me. And so do you want to do a tune tumult for this session? A. And B, when do you think is the next time we'll record? Like, so if we do one, it might be in 2 or 3 weeks by the time that we share it with each other. So yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm going to be in the air. I'm going to be in the sky when we would normally be recording.
So yeah, you can make it.
So that'll be fine. So we might miss a week, but
yeah,
we will definitely be recording at least once.
At least once. Obviously, we have to do at least one recording in person.
At least one.
It's going to be amazing.
And on the song front,
but it doesn't have to be on Fridays. We could do it on
many days. Mm-hmm. On the song front, though. I am intrigued as to whether we want to try and create the Everything is Everything anthem.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
So that might be something that I will be working on potentially in the sky while I'm in the sky.
Okay.
And bring some ideas to you.
Nice. Nice.
And you can bring your ideas and then we will smush them together. And
yeah, I'll give it a thought and see if I want to add anything more than my mush rant, but I'm pretty happy with how that one came out.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but I'm also happy to meld that with what you have, and yeah, we'll see how things go with that. That's
I'm really definitely great. Feeling the pop punk energy. I'm definitely feeling sort of early 2000s kind of energy. Mixed with the whole universe was in a hot dance state.
yeah. Oh yeah, I like the Bare Naked Ladies kind of style too. That would be really fun to incorporate.
There's a they might be bare naked giants. or they might be 182 offspring of the. of the Bare Naked Giants.
Love it. The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace. Yeah, if we were going to do a tune tumult, I had 5 possibilities. Anti-vaccine, conspiracies. Google will auto-complete that whole sentence, which I thought could have been a super fun... that could have been super fun. Control/obey, strong opinions loosely held. Yeah, there was
I definitely already know what the autocomplete song is.
Oh, dang.
I do not have time. I do not have time to make
do you have
a song
time for this.
fuck you. I did definitely do not have time to write that song, but I know what the song is.
Yeah.
Already.
Oh, that's fun.
Well, let's see what happens, eh?
I have an idea of how I would do that song too. That's definitely that was my top contender as well.
All right, buddy.
I don't know. Oh yeah, man. It's been a pleasure.
Oh my God.
Talk to you very soon in person. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I'm so thrilled that you're coming, dude. I can't even.
Thank you, Roscoe.
You might want to put some like sticky tape or something on those shelves so that when they try to jump up there and they learn.
He only really does it like because I'm seldom here now, and it's only when I'm in here that he gets frisky. Otherwise, like I'll come in so many times.
Yeah, you're not paying attention.
Yeah, exactly. God, you're gorgeous, but you're anyway. yes.